Shalom to all. In today's Afi Mishnah, we're going to learn Maseches B'chayros, Perek Tes Mishnah Ches, all the way through the brand new Masechta, Maseches Arachin, up until Perek Beis Mishnah Vav. And moving on to Mishnah Ches, the last Mishnah of the Masechta, Yatzu Shnayim Ke'echad. Let's say two animals ended up walking out at the same time. He wanted to count animal number one, but two came out at the same time. So Mayna Oysam Shnayim Shnayim, he just counts two two, which means he makes sure the rest of the animals leave in pairs, and he counts each pair as one. So the first pair is one, the next pair is two, the third pair is three, so on and so forth, and then the 10th pair that comes out is counted as 10, and both of those animals are Meister Behema. However, Minon Echad, let's say he counted the first pair that left as 1, and then all the subsequent animals that walked out of the pen didn't leave in pairs, they left individually. That means that he counts the second animal as 2, and the third animal as 3, but it's really not the second animal, it's really the third animal, and the third animal is really the fourth one, and the one that he counted as 4 is really 5, the one that he counts as 5 is really 6, so on and so forth. So Chiva Sirimikul Kulin, the 9th and 10th, meaning the ones that he counted as 9 and 10, they're messed up because that's the wrong cheshbon, it's the wrong count, and therefore they're not brought as Meister Behema. He has to wait till they get a mum, and then he can eat them like regular. And similarly, Yatsu Chiv Hasirika Achas, let's say he counted 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7, 8, and then numbers 9 and 10 came out as a pair. So here as well, Chiv Hasir Mukukulin, both the numbers 9 and 10 are Mukulkul, they're not considered like Meister Behema, and they're eating their state of mum. Now here we have an interesting case. Karo Lachi Hasiri, he was counting 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7, 8, and then the 9th one, he accidentally called the 10th one, Vilasiri Chi. And then the 10th one that went out, he called the 9th one because he got him with a bowl all confused since he didn't say the word 9 yet, because again, animal number 9, he called 10. So now the 10th animal, he backtracks and he calls that one the 9th one, Velachadus Arasiri, and then the 11th animal, he called the 10th one, Shloshtan Mikudashin. All of them are actually Kadosh, and that's based off of Joshua and a Pasuk that tells us the 9th, 10th, and 11th animals could all be considered Kadosh. Now the difference between this case and the previous two is that over here, each animal came out individually. He just used the wrong word to define this animal. And so all three of them still could be Kadosh, as opposed to in the previous two cases in the Mishnah, two animals ended up coming out at the same time, and so that in and of itself is considered Mekulkul, and that's why they're not Kadosh. Now what's done with these three animals, 9, 10, and 11? Remember, 9 he called 10, 11 he called 10, and the real 10th one he called 9, so Hachi Nechol Mumay, the 9th one has to be eaten only once it gets a mum, Vasiri Meiser, the 10th one is actually Meiser, even though he had called a 9, Vacharis Arkar Shlomim, and the 11th one is brought as a shlamim. Now another din about this 11th one, the oisa tamura, it could accomplish a tamura, divra meir, that's a meir's opinion. A tamura is when a person takes an animal that has kedusha and he tries to transfer its kedusha onto a different animal. He says zu tamura zu, this is an exchange of that. And when we say that something is oisa tamura, that means that the kedusha does successfully transfer to the new animal, and actually both of them are kadosh. So meir is telling us that this 11th animal, it could accomplish a tamura. If he says this is tamura is that, so then the new animal is a shlamim. However, Amar Behuda asks on him, V'chiyash tamura oisa tamura? Can an animal which it itself is a tamura now accomplish a tamura? No. If we have a carbon shlom in front of us, and then he takes another animal, he says, zu tamura zu. So now animal number two is a tamura. He's not able to take another animal and stand the next animal number two and say, zu tamura zu, and transfer that kedusha onto animal three. And that's what's happening over here, says Rabbi Huda. Animal 11 is only a tamura of animal 10. So how are you, Rav Meir, saying that animal 11 can make its own tamura? Now in response to this, Amar Mishum Rameir, they said, name Rameir, Iluhaya Tamura, Lahaya Karev. If animal number 11 itself was a Tamura, it never would be brought as a carbon in the first place. And that's because there's a din that Tamura of Meister Behema is not brought as a carbon. And therefore, by the fact that the Mishnah is saying that animal number 11 is brought as a Shlomim, it's not because it's a Tamura of animal number 10, it's a Shlomim by its own accord, and therefore it could accomplish Tamura. Now, into the last case of the Mishnah, Karlachi Hasiri, let's say he called the 9th animal the 10th one, Velasiri Hasiri, and the 10th one he called the 10th one. And the 11th one he called the 10th one as well. The 11th one is not Makodesh. And Zakal, this is the rule. If the 10th one never had its name 10 uprooted from it, then the 11th one is not Makodesh. It's only in the previous scenario of the Mishnah where he accidentally called the 10th one number 9, so then number 11 is Kodesh because he called a 10 and no animals were yet called 10. However, animal 10 was actually called 10 and then he decided to call 11 10 for whatever reason, that's not Kodesh. Now, if someone wants to donate money to the Beis HaMikdash, that's wonderful. Just drop it in the nearest Pushka or swipe the credit card. Now, sometimes he wants to make sure that he's going to actually give what he wants, so he makes a neder. Harei Alai, X amount of money. I take upon myself to give this amount of money, or Harei Alai, the value of a particular object. And then he has to give its value to the Beis HaMikdash. Similarly, one can donate the value of a person. So he could say, Demei so and so Alai. I'm going to give the value of that person. And then we evaluate how much he would be sold on the slave market for, and that's his value. Now, this Masechta, at least for the first five Prakim, discuss discusses something very similar, and that's his word arachin, which literally translated means values. So if Reuven says erech Shimon alai, he has to give Shimon's erech to the Beis HaMikdash. However, a person's erech is not their value they would be sold on the slave market for. It actually refers to a set value stated clearly in the Torah. So first of all, this depends on a person's gender. The erech of a male is higher than that of a female, and it also depends on their age. And the age groups are as follows: from a month to 5 years old, from 5 to 20, 20 to 60, and above 60. Now, another key difference between arachin and other monetary nedarim is if a person can't afford it. If, let's say, Reuven says, I'm going to pay Shimon's value and he doesn't have enough money, tough luck. He has to pay what he has and then he owes the rest. Whereas with arachin, if he can't afford it, he pays what he could afford and that's it. Mishnah Aleph tells us, Hakol ma'arichin. Anyone can make a neder of an erech, vin arachin, and they can also be the subject of an erech neder. So, for example, Reuven himself could say, I take upon myself erech of so-and-so or erech of myself. And erechin means that Shimon can say about Reuven, I'm going to give Reuven's erech. That's ma'arichin v'nerechin. Similarly, noidrin v'nidarin. Everyone can make a neder that he's going to pay the value of somebody else, and he can also be the subject of a neder. And this is also kaihanim levim yisraelim and nashim v'avadim. They're all including these four things we just mentioned. However, tumtum v'androgynous. A tumtum is somebody who has a piece of skin covering their private area, so we don't know if they're male or female. And an androgynous is someone who has both genitals, male and female. So as well, we don't know if they're male or female. Neidrin v'nidarin u'marichin, they can make a neder of paying somebody else's value. They can also be the subject of a neder because they do have a value on the slave market. And they also could be marich. They can make an erech neder regarding somebody else's erech. Avaloi ne'erachin. They cannot be the subject of an erech neder. She'en an erech el zachar vadu nekeva vadayis, because the only one that can be the subject of a neder arachin is somebody who's for sure male or female, and a tumtum androgynous is not for sure either one of those. Furthermore, cheresh shaita v'katon, somebody who's deaf mute or he's considered shaita, he doesn't have his full faculties, or he's a katon, nidarin vine erachin, they can be the subject of a neder or of an erech. Avoloi noidun v'loi marichin, they themselves can't make this neder or erech mnei she'en ben das. They don't have official halachic das. And lastly, pachs ben chodesh, if somebody's younger than a month old, nidar avoloi nerach, they can be the subject of a neder because they do have value on the slave market, but they cannot be the subject of a neder erech because, as we said in the introduction, arachin in the Torah starts from a month old. Moving on to Mishnah Beis, hanachri, a non-Jew, Remeir says, ne'erach avoloi ma'arech, he can be the subject of an erech, but he himself cannot make a neder erech, whereas Rabbi Yehuda says the other way around, ma'arech, he could make an erech neder and he would have to pay it, avoloi ne'erach, but he cannot be the subject of a neder erech because he's not a yid. Now, Zev Zamoidim, both these Tanoim agree, shenoidrin v'nidarin, that they could make a neder and be the subject of a neder because this just has to do with a person's monetary value on the slave market, which of course even a non-Jew has. And the Mishnah tells us hagoises, someone who's at death's door, he's a sickly person who's literally about to die. Vehayotze lahareg, someone who's being brought out to be killed. So loy nidar v'loy nerach, they're not able to be the subject of a neder or an erech, and that's because they don't have any value at all. However, Chanin ben Akavya Omer, he says nerach, he could be the subject of an erech, b'nei shedam of ketuvin. That's because the value of an erech is set in the Torah. It's not totally if a person is able to be sold on the slave market. It just has to do with how old they are. And even though they're about to die, it doesn't make a difference. They still have an erech. Aval, however, einoy nidar, they cannot be the subject of a neder, b'nei she'en dam of ketuvin, because they don't have a set value. They don't have any value. They're about to die. Now, Rabbi Yossi says, neider umarech umakdish, this person who's being brought out to be killed or he's about to die, he could make a neder or an erech, and he can also be makdish something to the Beis HaMikdash, and that's because this has nothing to do with him being about to die or not. And if he damages something, he would have to pay for that. And on to Mishnah Dalet, Ha'isha Shiyotzel Harig, if a woman is being brought out to be killed, Ein Mamtin Laja Teled, we don't wait for her to give birth. If she's pregnant, we don't say, let's wait for her to give birth. We kill her with the fetus inside, and that's because her and the child inside are considered like one. However, Yashva Ala Mashber, which is the Mishnah's way of saying, if she already began to give birth, so then Mamtin Laja Teled, we wait till she actually gives birth to the baby, and that's because once the baby has moved to start coming out, it's considered a separate entity from the mother, and therefore we're going to wait for her to give birth, and only then she's going to be brought to be killed. Now, one more thing about this woman, Ha'ish Janerga, if a woman was killed, Nani Besara, one could benefit from her hair. Now, the chiddush over here is that we know somebody who was killed, that which is on them is Asur Bana, however, we are allowed to benefit from her hair, and the hair that we're talking about over here is actually referring to a shetel, a peya, a wig, not her hair which is connected to her head, and this is also only when specifically stipulates before she is killed, I want you to give my wig to so-and-so. So then she's shown that her wig is not really part of her, and so one can benefit from it and it could be given away. However, behema shenerga, if an animal was killed. For example, if this animal killed somebody else, so Beis Din paskin that we have to kill the animal, asur b'hanoya, its hair and anything attached to it is asur b'hano. And the Mishnah tells us, ain't b'arachin pachas misela, v'loy yasra chamishim sela. An erech is not going to be less than a sela, and it can't be more than 50 sela. As we mentioned in the introduction to the Masechta, an erech has a set value in the Torah, depends if you're male or female, depends how old you are. And we had also said that a key thing about arachin is that if a person is not able to afford it, the lashon of the pasuk is in like hesed yad, he doesn't have enough money, so he has to pay a minimal amount of money. And that's what Mishnah just told us, that the minimal amount he has to pay is a sela, and the maximum he could pay is 50 sela. That's for male who's between 20 and 60. So now the Mishnah tells us about a situation. Ketzad, what's an example of this? So let's say nasan sela, a person paid one sela because he didn't have enough money. He pledged his own erech. Let's say he said erech yolai, that's 50 sela, and he didn't have enough money. He was very poor, so he gave one sela the hashir, and then he became wealthy. Any nice and Columbia doesn't have to give anything because he already paid off his erech by giving that one sela. However, pachas misela, if he paid less than a sela because he didn't even have one sela to pay for his erech the hashir, and then he became wealthy, nice chamishim sela, he has to give a full 50 sela because that half a sela that he gave is nothing, and so he still has the full 50 erech on his head. Now that he became wealthy, he has to give the 50. Now what about the following situation? Let's say he has only 5 slime that he could give. He made an erech of 50 and he only has 5. So Rameir says, ain't nice and ela echas, he only gives 1. Since he can't give the full 50, he just has to give 1. Whereas the Chum say, nice and is cool, he has to give all of them. And that looks like the Chumim. Once again, the Mishnah tells us, this din, ain't barach and bachas misela, v'lo yasra chamishim sela, an erech can't be less than 1 sela or more than 50. Now, once we mention this concept of something having a minimum and maximum, we're going to continue with a number of other things like this in this Mishnah and the next two Mishnayas. So Mishnah tells us, ain't pesach bataya, pachas misheva, v'lo yasra al sheva asar. Somebody who's pesach bataya, we'll explain this in a moment, can't be less than 7 days and not more than 17. Now, this requires quite an explanation, and we're going to try to keep it as simple as possible because it's pretty confusing. We know that nowadays, anytime a woman sees dam, she has blood come from her rechem, she's considered tameh, and then she has to wait for a number of days. She does something called hafsek tara, then she waits another 7 nikiyim, she counts 7 clean days, and only then she can go to the mikvah. However, this is really just a number of chumers piled on top of each other. Midah ayraisa, a woman's cycle goes like this. She has 7 yimei nida and 11 yimei ziva. In other words, at the beginning of her yimei nida, she sees dam, she has blood come from her, so she's tameh for the next 7 days. It could be that she has dam every single one of those days of the 7 days. It could be not. It doesn't really make a difference. Once she sees dam in her yimei nida, she's tameh until day 7. Then she has to make sure that she's clean. Then she goes to the mikvah and she's perfectly fine. She's tar. She could be with her husband. The next 11 days after the first 7 days of yimei nida are called yimei ziva. So if she saw dam one day or 2 days, she's called shemer siyam keneged yom. She just has to make sure that she's clean for a day, and then she go to the mikvah and she's tar. She's allowed to be with her husband. However, if she sees dam 3 days in a row, that makes her a zava gedayla, and she has to count shiva nekiyim. She has to count 7 clean days. Then she could go to the mikvah and she would have to bring a karbon. Now, even though we just said that yimei ziva is 11 days, that's only if at the end of the 11 days she's not a zava gedayla. But if she continuously sees dam, if she does so even for a month straight, she stays in the status of a zava gedayla until she's able to count shiva nekiyim, 7 clean days, and only then, after that's over, she reverts back to yimei nida, and then we have this cycle once again of 7 and 11, 7 and 11. Now, the following is what the Mishnah is referring to. Let's say she doesn't know where she's holding. Is she in yimei nida or is she in yimei ziva? And obviously, an afkamina would be that if she sees dam, she doesn't know what to do. If she sees dam one day and she's in yimei ziva, then she just has to be shemer siyam keneged yom, and she would be mutter the next day. However, if she's in yimei nida, she would have to wait 7 full days, and it would be the same thing. Let's say she sees 3 days in a row. If she's in yimei ziva, then she's a zava gedayla, and she would have to count shiva nekiyim. But if she's in yimei nida, then seeing 3 days in a row doesn't make a difference. She just waits till day 7, and then she go to the mikvah and she's fine. And therefore, the Mishnah tells us that when she's besafik, she doesn't know if she sees dam one day, so then the minimum she's able to wait is 7, because maybe she's in yimei nida, so she'd have to wait till the end of 7 days. Then the maximum she would have to wait is 17 days, because if she doesn't see dam for 17 days straight, then for sure, either which way, she's back at yimei nida, and that's what the Mishnah is telling us. The Mishnah continues with a similar din. This has to do with tsaras. We know that tsaras is a skin issue that causes toma, and the Torah teaches us that tsaras could be on a person, clothing, or a house, and the basic din with all these is as follows. When a person sees a nega tsaras, the kohen comes and determines if it's tamei or tahar. Now, if it's a safek, then the kohen declares hezger, quarantine, on the person, clothing, or house, and after that, he comes back to see if there's a change. And that's what the Mishnah tells us. In b'negayim pachas mishavua echad, with negayim, there can't be hezger of less than 1 week, v'lo yaisar al shlesh shavuos, and not more than 3 weeks. And that's because, as we just said, with everything, the minimum hezger is 1 week. Now, with people in clothing, the maximum is 2 weeks, and with a house, the maximum is 3. That's if after 2 weeks of hezger, the kohen comes back and sees that there's no change on the nega that's on the wall of the house, so all the stones that have nega on them are removed, they're replaced, re-cemented, and then they're quarantined for another another week to see if something happened, to see if the tzaraas comes back or if not. But bottom line is, the maximum is 3 weeks when we're talking about tzaraas. On to Mishnah Beis with similar dinim of a minimum and a maximum. Nothing has to do with a Jewish month. We know that a Jewish month has either 29 or 30 days. That's called chaser or malay. And how does this work? So really, the cycle of the moon is approximately 29 and a half days. If you're curious, the exact number is 29 days, 12 hours, and 793 chalakim. Bottom line is, every single month needs to be either a little less, that's 29, that's chaser, or a little more, that's 30, that's malay. So the Mishnah tells us, ein pachser me'arba chadash ha'mubar b'shana, we don't have less than 4 extended months, meaning 4 full months of 30 days throughout the year, and v'loy ner yosel shmeina, the chachamim didn't see a fit to make more than 8, and so that means that there's going to be a minimum of 4 and a maximum of 8 months that are 30 days. On to the next din, shteh halechem nechalas ein pachas mishnayim, v'loy yosel al-shleisha, the shteh halechem, which are the two breads that are baked for shvuas, and they're eaten on shvuas, they're not eaten anything less than 2 days and anything more than 3 days. That's because baking the bread itself is not doicha yomtiv, so they can't be baked on Shavuos. They have to be baked beforehand. So if Shavuos is in the middle of the week, Shavuos is, let's say, on a Tuesday, they're going to be baked on Monday. That means they're going to be eaten on Tuesday, which is Shnayim. That's the second day since they're baking. However, if Shavuos is on a Sunday, that means that they're going to be baked on Friday, so they're going to end up being eaten on the third day after being baked. And so it's not less than 2 and not more than 3. The Mishnah continues, Lechem Aponim, Nechal Ein Pachas Mitesha, V'lo Yisrael Acharasar, Lechem Aponim, the showbreads. These are the 12 breads that are put on the Shulchan every single week in the base of Mikdash. They're not eating anything less than 9 days since they're baking, and not more than 11. How is that? That's because we know they're placed on the Shulchan on Shabbos, and they're not eaten until the next Shabbos. And since they're not baked on Shabbos, they're baked on Friday. Friday is day one. Then you count from that Shabbos till the next Shabbos. So it turns out that there's 9 days from when they're baked until they're eaten. And when we say that not more than 11, that's referring to when Rosh Hashanah is 2 days before Shabbos. It's Thursday, Friday. So that means the Lechem Aponim is going to be baked on Wednesday. So it turns out that these Lechem Aponims are going to end up being eaten 11 days after they were baked. Lastly, the Mishnah says, a child, a baby boy, doesn't get his bris milah less than 8 days and not more than 12 days. 8 days, we know, is because the Torah says on the 8th day he gets his bris. And when we say not more than 12 days, that's in a situation where the baby was born Erev Shabbos Bein HaShemashos, and Bein HaShemashos is a suffix, is a day or night. So we don't know if the baby's born on Friday or Shabbos. We can't give the baby bris on Friday because the baby was born on Shabbos. We can't give him on Shabbos because a bris shaloi bizmanoi is not doicha Shabbos, and maybe the baby was really born on Friday. Therefore, in this situation, we would have to give the baby a bris on Sunday. And 2 days of Rosh Hashanah are after Shabbos, so we can't give the baby a bris until Wednesday, and that would end up being 12 days from when the baby's born. And the Mishnah tells us, Ein parsin me'esim v'achas kiyas v'mikdash v'lem v'sifin al-arbayim v'shmaynet. There's not ever anything less than 21 trumpet blasts in the base of Mikdash, and not more than 48. And the last paragraph of Masechta Sukkah details when we're going to have these blasts, when the trumpet or the shofar is going to be blown, how many times, for which scenarios. But the bottom line is that the minimum is 21, the maximum is 48, and actually, as Rav points out, the maximum really is 75. It's just that that's such a unique situation when Erev Pesach falls on Shabbos, and that's so rare, the Mishnah doesn't bother mentioning it. The standard maximum is 48. The Mishnah continues, Ein pachsin mishnei nevalin v'lo mesif al shisha. Then when Levim were playing their musical instruments, there couldn't be less than 2 nevalim. A naval is some sort of stringed instrument. Sometimes it's translated as a lyre, L-Y-R-E. Either which way, it was this instrument that they played, so they couldn't have anything less than 2 and not more than 6. Continuing to discuss these musical instruments, Ein pachsin mishnei chalilin v'lo mesif al shneimasar. There couldn't be any less than 2 flutes and not more than 12. And where did this 12 come from? U'b'shneimasar yoyim b'shana chalul makal f'nei mizbeach. There's 12 days throughout the year that a flute would be played in front of the mizbeach. The reason why it's called maked is because in order to make the sound from the flute, the player strikes the holes, and that's what produces the beautiful sound. And when are these 12 days? B'shchitas Pesach Rishon, b'shchitas Pesach Sheni, by the shchita of Karban Pesach Rishon, which is the rain Karban Pesach. Pesach Sheni is a month later, if whoever couldn't bring Pesach Rishon. U'b'yantav Rishon Shal Pesach, on the first day of Pesach itself. U'b'yantav Shal Atzeres, on Shavuos, u'b'shmoni me'achag, the 8 days of Sukkot, that's really 7 days of Sukkot and 1 day of Shmini Atzeres. V'loi hay makah ba'avu shal nechoshes, el ba'avu shal kaneh. They would not play on a copper flute, rather on a reed flute, m'nei shekoyle arev. That's because it's a much sweeter, more pleasant sound. And v'loi hay makah like el ba'avu yichidi, they wouldn't end off the song except with an individual flute. V'b'nei shu machlik yofe, that's because it's a beautiful ending. If you have 2 flutes ending off the song, it's not as beautiful as when you just have 1 flute with that last ending note. Now, once we're on the topic of playing musical instruments during the Avodah, Mishnah Dala tells us, Va'avta kehanim hayu divra meir. Rav Meir says that the people who are playing these musical instruments could even be the Avadim, the slaves of the kehanim. And that's because Rav Meir holds, Ein malin min aduchen liyuchsin ulamaisres. Just because somebody is on the duchen, they're on this platform playing a musical instrument in the Mizbeach, that doesn't mean, number one, that they're a Levi, and that doesn't mean, number or two that they have a good yichus, that they come from a chashev family, and therefore wouldn't really care who plays there. It could even be the slaves of the kaihanim. However, Rabbi Yossi says mishpacha is beis habagarim ubeis sefaryo umeamamim hayu. The people who plays musical instruments were either families of beis habagarim or beis sefaryo, who were from this place called amom, and these were very special families. Masiyin lekuhuna, the kaihanim would marry into these families. That's because they were mishpachas miyuchasos. They came from pure lineage, from good yichus, and we see that Rabbi Yossi holds that we are male min haduchen liyochsen. In other words, when we see somebody on the duchen playing a musical instrument, we're going to say, wow, they must be of good yichus, and therefore only these types of people were able to play the musical instruments. But he still does agree with Rav Meir that we're not male min haduchen lemaisris, and therefore just because somebody's on the duchen, that doesn't mean they could eat maisr, it doesn't mean they're a levi. However, he says, levim hayu, the only people that could play the musical instruments were levim, because he holds the male min haduchen liyochsen ulemaisris. Therefore, we have to make sure that whoever's playing these instruments is a levi. And the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi. Mishnah tells us, we don't have anything less than 6 lambs that are checked in the lishka of the lambs. That's enough for Shabbos and for 2 years Rosh Hashanah, and we can add on as many as we want. Now, what's this referring to? So we know that there's 2 lambs brought every single day in the Beis Hamikdash. That's the morning carbon tamid and the afternoon carbon tamid. And this Tana holds that they require bikur. They have to be checked. They have to make sure that they don't have any movement, any blemishes that would passel them from being brought as a carbon. And that requires 4 days of being sequestered, being put away to the side under watch, and so they're kept in this lishkas atalayim, this room for the lambs, which was in the Beis Hamikdash compound. So Mishnah is telling us we can't have anything less than 6 lambs in there. That's because sometimes there's going to be a number of days where we're not going to be able to obtain new ones. For example, Shabbos is a classic, and let's say Shabbos is followed by Rosh Hashanah, so it's 3 days in a row we're not going to be able to get lambs. That means we're going to have to make sure that we have 6 lambs there already prepared for these days. However, that's just the minimum of 6. There's no maximum. We can add as many as we want. Mishnah continues, ein pachas mishtecha tzoytzois u'masifin ad lo'ilam, that anytime we need chatzotzos, we need trumpets to be blown, there's anything less than 2 that are used, but we could add on many as we want. And in pachasim tisha kinoiras, when there's a kinor being played, there's anything less than 9 of them, and we see if an ala olam. However, v'hat tziltzol levad, tziltzol is the symbols, that's played alone, it's never done with another one. And moving on to Mishnah Vav, in pachasim mishneim also levim oydem al duchen, there's not anything less than 12 levim standing on the duchen, which was like the platform that they would stand on when they sing shira. We see if an ala olam, we could add as many as we want. And also on the topic of levim, in katan nichas hazar lavayda el b'shash alvim oim de bashir, a katan meaning a young levi, he's too young to do avayda, he's not allowed to come into the hazar at all unless the levim are standing there singing shir. And when they did come in, they wouldn't be there playing musical instruments el bapeh, they would just sing with their mouths. Could they litain tevel ban ima in order to add spice, flavor to the song? We know that young children tend to have beautiful voices, very pure and sweet. So that's what they're doing. Tevel's lashon of tavlin, they're adding spice and additional beauty to the already beautiful song of the levim, but they're just singing, they're not playing musical instruments. And Rabbi Ben Yaakov, remember, he tells us ein oil leminyan, they can't join the minyan, they can't be part of the minyan of these 12 that we mentioned. Vein oim al duchen, they can't stand on the duchen el ba'aretz hoyim, then they have to stand on the ground. Rashem bein ragla levim, and their heads are in between the legs of the levim. Vitzayirei halavim hayu nekrayin, and they were called the tzayirim of the levim. They would, so to speak, cause pain or bother them. That's because the kids sing so beautifully, and the grown levim weren't able to reach that beauty in their singing. So the young ones were called Sayre Halavim. We're going to stop for the day and pick up tomorrow with Parag Gimel, Mishnah Aleph. But for now, everyone should have a wonderful day.